This examination of the timeline in Revelation 12 is not affiliated with any religion or doctrine. All required research was done independently by myself, unless otherwise noted, and is under copyright. In previous videos, we found that Daniel 12, Revelation 12, and Matthew 24 give varying details of the same basic timeline that looks initially like this. We also examined the first five verses of Revelation 12 that describes a sign in heaven that occurred in 686 CE during the building of the Dome of the Rock, which seems to confirm this timeline. So in this video, we're going to chart the rest of Revelation chapter 12, which adds more details to the initial timeline and clarifies that the initial table from Daniel 12 and Matthew 24 looks more like this. So, as we discussed in the previous video, verses 1 through 5 of Revelation 12 describe a sign in heaven. So, the celestial sign is the first event in Revelation 12. So, we'll put it here so we can look at this chapter visually. So, verses 1 through 5 of Revelation 12 describe the sign in heaven. And the next event, it says in verse 5, is the woman's child is caught up to God and to his throne. And we know this is no longer referring to the heavenly sign in verses 1 through 5 because God is in heaven, and to be caught up to God implies that the child is on the earth. So the child being caught up to God's throne seems to be an event on earth that occurs after the sign in heaven. And verse 5 also tells us the child is the man who will rule with the rod of iron, which we found out in a previous video represents Jesus. However, the one who rules with the rod of iron is also mentioned in Revelation chapter 2. It says, "He that overcomes and keeps my works until the end, he shall rule them with a rod of iron, and I will give him the morning star." And by the way, the word "he" isn't actually used in the Greek in either one of these verses, and the word for "rule" also means act as a shepherd. So this can also say those who overcome will act as a shepherd or rule with a rod of iron. So in Revelation 12, when it says in verse 5, the child who rules with a rod of iron will be caught up to God and to his throne, it can also refer to those who overcome and keep the works until the end. And notice in verse 5, there are two different words translated as child. The first word, number 5207, means son or male child. But the second word is number 5043, which means offspring. So the child in the second part of verse 5 is not the same child in the first part of verse 5. In the first part of verse 5, it refers to the man-child who was Jesus, represented by the sun as the sign in heaven. But the second part of verse 5 refers to the offspring of the woman on earth who will be caught up to God after the sign in heaven. So we'll put that on the chart here. It says, after the sign in heaven, the offspring will be caught up to God's throne. And notice it doesn't say how much time passes between the sign and the offspring going up to heaven. It just indicates they will be caught up after the sign. So we'll put a question here because it doesn't specify how much time passes between the sign and the offspring going up to God's throne. The only clue we're given is in the word offspring, which can also mean descendants. And the descendants could be any number of generations down the line. So it established in the second part of verse 5 that it's no longer talking about the sign in heaven. And verse 6 confirms that when it says, "And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared of God that they should feed her there 1,260 days, which is 1,260 days. So we'll put that on the chart. It says the woman will flee into the wilderness after the sign in heaven and will be in the wilderness for 1260 days. And we know days can also be years, so this is 1260 days or years. And this matches perfectly what Matthew 24 and Daniel 12 said. We covered this in a previous video. The word "flee" in Revelation 12 verse 6 is the same word used in Matthew 24. Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation stand in the holy place, then those in Judea will flee into the mountains, for then shall be great tribulation. So this timeline in Revelation 12 matches Matthew 24. And the woman in Revelation 12:6 appears to refer to those in Judea in Matthew 24:16. And this also seems at first glance to refer to the escape in Daniel 12, but Revelation 12 adds more details to this timeline. So it says the woman will flee into the wilderness after the sign in heaven. So the sign in heaven occurs before the woman flees into the wilderness. And Jesus said the abomination of desolation occurs before those in Judea flee into the mountains. So this indicates the sign in Revelation 12 might occur when the abomination of desolation stands in the holy place. And that's exactly what happened. In the previous video, we found that this sign occurred in 686 CE in the second year of the setting up of the Dome of the Rock, which Daniel 11 clarified was the abomination of desolation. And we were also told in Daniel 12 that the abomination of desolation would occur 1290 years after the daily sacrifice was taken away. So we'll add that to the table here. Daniel 12 says the abomination of desolation occurs 1290 years after the daily sacrifice was taken away. We looked at that in a previous video. So you can see Daniel 12, Revelation 12, and Matthew 24 are describing the same sequence of events, and each is providing new details to complete the timeline. So the first part of the timeline looks like this. We're told by Daniel that the abomination of desolation will be set up 1290 years after the daily sacrifice is taken away. Then Jesus told us after the abomination of desolation stands in the holy place, those in Judea will flee into the mountains, which Revelation 12 tells us is a period of 1260 days or years. And immediately after that, Jesus said the sun and moon will go dark and the stars will fall, which Revelation 9 tells us is the asteroid impact, as we discussed previously. So Revelation 12 is about to add more details to this timeline. So we're going to add what we know from previous videos on this chart over to the Revelation 12 chart. And we're going to start at the sign in 686 because that's where the timeline in Revelation 12 starts. So the sign occurred at the abomination of desolation in 686 CE, and we were not given the time period between the abomination of desolation and the fleeing into the mountains, but we were told the fleeing into the mountains starts the 1260 day or year tribulation, and immediately after that, the asteroid will impact. So Revelation 12 is going to add more details to this chart from the previous video, and so far, Revelation 12 has simply added that the sign appears before they flee, and the offspring or descendants of the woman will be caught up to God after the sign. And we know from our examination of the sign in the previous video that it occurred most recently in the year 2012. So when verse 5 says the offspring or descendants of the woman will be caught up to God, it's indicating that event will occur generations later. But still, it makes clear that they will be caught up after the sign. And now that we understand that the sign is a celestial synchronization that occurs in cycles, it makes sense that the offspring or descendants will be caught up after a future sign. So we'll put the sun symbol here at the end to represent the future sign that will occur before the offspring or descendants are caught up to God. So the most recent sign occurred 3 years ago in October of 2012, and the next one will occur in 2454. So it will be close in 2218, but as you can see in 2218, at the moment the moon reaches alignment with the feet, the sun will not actually be touching the line that represents Virgo's birth canal. And so the sun will be below, not touching the line in 2218. And also in 1982, you can also see the moon reached alignment with the feet when the sun was below and not touching the line, representing Virgo's birth canal. So in reality, this sign only occurred 12 times in 3,000 years. Most recently, it occurred in 2012, and the next time it occurs is in 2454. So this was the sign in 2012, and this will be the sign in 2454. So Revelation 12 is telling us the offspring or descendants of the woman will be caught up to God after the sign. And that sign only comes close to occurring approximately every 200 years, but it doesn't always hit the mark. So for example, 200 years from the sign in 2012 will land in 2218, but it will miss the mark at that time. But then in 2454, it will occur again. So the sign just happened 3 years ago and won't happen for another 500 years approximately. So it says the offspring will be caught up to God's throne after the sign, but it doesn't specify how much time will pass between the sign and the catching up. But it does give us some other details, so we'll just keep reading. So the woman escapes in verse 6. Then verse 7 says, "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels." And notice it does not tell us exactly when that war starts. It only indicates that it starts after the woman flees into the wilderness. So we'll put that on the chart. The war in heaven starts after the woman flees into the wilderness. And it tells us Michael and the dragon are fighting in the war, but it doesn't specify when that war starts exactly. So we'll leave a question at the start of that war in heaven for now. Also notice the word translated as heaven, number 3772, literally means the vaulted expanse of the sky. The sky, the region where the clouds gather and where thunder and lightning are produced. It can also mean the universe or the starry heavens, which we now refer to as space. So Revelation 12 doesn't specify when exactly, but sometime after the woman flees into the wilderness, a war in the skies will occur or a war in space will occur. It can be either one or both. So the direct translation says a war in the skies. Michael, messenger, makes war, dragon. Dragon, messenger, make war. So somewhere within the 1260 days or years, Michael and the dragon fight a war either in the skies or in space. So let's add this to the timeline here. After the woman flees into the wilderness, there's a war in heaven or a war in the skies or space. Then the King James translation says in verse 8, the dragon prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. But the direct translation can also say, but there was not yet power or a place found in heaven. So there was a war in the skies, but there was not yet power or a place found in heaven. That's one possible translation, and that'll make sense in a moment. So then it says in verses 9 and 10 that the dragon was cast out into the earth, and it says at that point there is salvation and the kingdom of our God. So we'll put that on the chart. After the war in heaven, the dragon is cast to earth, and there is salvation at that point and also God's kingdom. So we'll add that to this timeline. After the war in heaven, then the dragon is cast to earth. So this section gives us more information about the dragon. So we're going to take note of this. It says the dragon goes to war with Michael in verse 7. And in the previous video on the sign of Revelation 12, we found out the dragon has 7 heads and 10 horns and gives power to the beast, which Daniel told us is the final world government that rules when the asteroid hits. Revelation 12 also clarified for us that the dragon represents the asteroid impact itself and is represented by the constellation Draco and the planet Saturn. Now we're told the dragon goes to war with Michael. So verse 7 also indicates the dragon has angels. The direct translation says dragon messenger waged war. So that indicates either that the dragon is a messenger or that the dragon has messengers who fight in the war. So the dragon either is a messenger or has messengers. And then verse 9 says the dragon is that old serpent. And that word serpent is number 3789, which means snake. But notice it says the word origin is probably from 3700 through the idea of sharpness of vision. And 3700 means to allow oneself to be seen or to appear. And the phrase that old serpent or the ancient serpent is a reference to Genesis 3, which is the beginning of the story of the serpent in the biblical text. And that ancient Hebrew word translated as serpent, number 5175, also means image. So the Greek word for serpent stems from a word that means appearance, and the Hebrew word for serpent literally means image. And the next point verse 9 makes is that the dragon is called devil, which is word number 1228, which means false accuser or slanderer. So the dragon is called the false accuser and is also called Satan, which is number 4567, which means adversary. So the dragon is called the adversary. So verse 9 is giving us a lot of information about the dragon. It was cast out, that old serpent called the false accuser and the adversary, which deceives the whole world. So the final point here is that the dragon deceives the whole world. And we'll keep this list for future reference, but the point for now is number 5, the dragon is fighting a war with Michael. And that war starts sometime after those in Judea flee into the wilderness, and it's a war in the skies or a war in space. And at the end of that war, the dragon is cast to earth, but at that time there is also salvation in God's kingdom. And that phrase in verse 10, now is come the kingdom of our God, that's a clue that the dragon is cast to earth during the feat of Daniel's image in Daniel 2. Verse 44 says, and in the days of these kings, God will set up a kingdom. And it's talking about the toes of the feet in verse 42. The toes of the feet are part iron and clay. They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom. So the kings, in verse 44, refer to the toes of the feet. So the 10 toes of the feet are the 10 kings in Daniel 7, verse 24. It says there are 10 kings that rise out of the fourth beast. And we looked at this in a previous video. There are two sections of the fourth empire in Daniel 2, the legs and the feet. And in Daniel 7, we're told the 10 horns of the fourth empire are 10 kings or kingdoms. And Daniel 2 indicates the toes of the feet are the 10 kings. Therefore, the 10 kings or kingdoms will occur during the feet section, the final segment of the fourth empire that Daniel says will rule the whole world. And Daniel 2 said the kingdom of God will be set up during those 10 kings. So when it says in Revelation 12 that God's kingdom will be set up at the end of the war in heaven, it's giving us a clue that the war in heaven ends at the time of the 10 kings, which you can see roughly lines up with 1945 on this chart. And that's interesting because 1945 was the end of World War II, which was the first major war that took place in the skies. And World War II ended in 1945. And notice there were exactly 1260 years from 685 CE until 1945 when World War II, the war in the skies, ended. And 1945 was also the year the prisoners were released from the Nazi concentration camps. The first camp was liberated in July of 1944, and the rest of the camps were liberated from January to May of 1945. So that may be the salvation it refers to after the war in the skies. So now verse 8 makes more sense in when it says in the direct translation that after the war in the skies, there will not yet be power or a place found in heaven. So that makes sense because the International Space Station wasn't set up yet in 1945. So a war in the skies, but the place in heaven will not be set up yet. And the King James translation of verse 10 says, "Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night." But look at the direct translation. It's talking about after the war in the skies, and it says, "Now is deliverance and salvation and the strength of the kingdom of God and the power and authority to act." But that word for God, number 2316, means four things. It can mean the one and only true God, as it's usually assumed to be. But the first definition is a god or goddess, a general name of deities. And notice the fourth definition is whatever can in any respect be likened unto God. And it gives the example, God's representative. And that's important because this word theos can also refer to the Pope, who is referred to as the vicar of Christ or the earthly representative of God or Christ. That's the literal definition of the word theos. And that's the word that's used in Revelation 12:10. So it says, after the war in the skies, which may refer to World War II, it says here, now is deliverance, which was the release of the prisoners from the concentration camps. So now is deliverance, but also the strength of the kingdom of Theos, the one who claims to be the representative of God, and its power to act or authority. So again, what happened in 1945? It was the first year of the United Nations. And we're going to take this last part of this chart right here, the fourth beast, the Roman Empire, and we're going to move this over to this chart so we can see more of the details. So remember, Daniel 8 said, a king of fierce countenance will rise in the latter time of the four dynasties, right here, Daniel 8, verse 23. In the latter time of their kingdom, a king of fierce countenance shall stand up and by peace destroy many. So it's talking about the latter time of the four kingdoms in verse 22, the four kingdoms of Greece back here. We covered this in a previous video. In the latter time of their kingdom, which was in the 1920s at the tail end of the Turkish Empire, which was also known as the Ottoman Empire, at the tail end of that, it says a king of fierce countenance will stand up and by peace destroy many. So we know the word king in Daniel can also mean kingdom. So a king of fierce countenance or a kingdom of fierce countenance that will destroy by peace. So 3 years before the Ottoman Empire ended, the League of Nations rose up, whose principal mission was to maintain peace after World War I. And it was renamed the United Nations in 1945 after World War II. So World War I was not a war in the skies. It was fought primarily on the ground and in the sea. But World War II was the first major war fought in the sky. So we'll put that here. The war in the sky, World War II, ended in 1945 with the release of the Nazi prisoners. But it also ended with the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So 1945 may have represented salvation for the prisoners in Germany, but it was destruction and death for innocent civilians in Japan. And that's important to remember because when it says in Revelation 12:10 that the kingdom of Theos was set up at that time, it cannot possibly be referring to the true God. It must be referring to the false representative of God, which is what that word Theos means. And it confirms that in Revelation 13, which we'll talk about in another video. So it says now, after the war in the sky, deliverance and the strength of the kingdom or empire of Theos and its power to act or authority. And the anointed one will become an accuser. Okay, so that seems to be referring to what some call the Antichrist. And please bear with me here because this is confirmed in Daniel and also the next chapter in Revelation and the rest of the prophetic text. This is the time period when the Antichrist rises, the little horn. So Revelation 12 is confirming what Daniel already said. The kingdom that destroys by peace will rise at the tail end of the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire. And that kingdom of fierce countenance refers to the final phase of the fourth beast. And we'll see confirmation of that in another video. But the little horn is what some refer to as the Antichrist. But Daniel tells us it's the little horn that comes out of the beast. And it's a little king or a little kingdom. In other words, a little country that will come out of the beast. And as of now, it appears the United Nations is that beast ruling the whole world by peace. And in the third year from the founding of the United Nations on November 29th, 1947, the United Nations recommended a partition plan for Palestine in order to create a Jewish state. And the State of Israel was declared in May of 1948. So the country of Israel was established by the United Nations, the kingdom that destroys by peace. And that was established in 1947. And the Torah itself confirms that the modern country named Israel is the horn in Lamentations chapter 2. It calls the country of Israel the daughter of Zion. And Isaiah talks about this as well, but it says here how the Lord covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger. He cut off in his fierce anger all the horn of Israel. So it confirms here that the country named Israel is the horn. And you can see here, it's a small country, a little country, that if you look at it from the north, the Mediterranean Sea here in red resembles the head of a beast, and the little country of Israel looks like the horn on that beast. So the Bible itself is telling us the daughter of Zion, the country of Israel, is the horn. It's the little horn, the little king or little kingdom that was established by the world government that destroys by peace. That's what the biblical texts are telling us so far. And it continues to confirm that as we go through Revelation. So the country of Israel created in 1947, that's not the true Israel. Jesus said true Israel is the whole world. So it's not a small country in the Middle East. That Middle Eastern country created by the beast is just a country. It's not the true Israel of the ancient text. Jesus clarified that. So when Revelation 12 says, after the war in the skies, the representative of God will have the power to act, and the anointed one will become an accuser of their brethren and cast accusations in the sight of God day and night, that makes sense. So because the anointed one, Messiah Christ, seems to refer to the Antichrist in this verse, the little horn. And that seems clear because it was after 1945 that they began accusing anyone who was against their occupation of Palestine of anti-Semitism. But there are plenty of Jews who recognize that the country of Israel has nothing to do with Judaism. The little horn of Israel is not a true representative of God. It's a false representative. So the common term that people use is Antichrist. But technically, the biblical prophetic texts call it the little horn of the beast, which is the little king or little kingdom of the beast, which we can see now appears to be the little country called Israel that the United Nations created. So Revelation 12 says the anointed one became an accuser at that point, at the end of the war in the sky in 1945. And that occurred exactly 1260 years after 685. So Daniel 11 clarified for us that the abomination of desolation occurred in 685. It was the Dome of the Rock built on the Jerusalem Temple Mount. Then Jesus said those in Judea, in other words, the Jews, will flee into the mountains. That was the woman in Revelation 12, verse 6, who fled into the wilderness for 1260 years. Then the war in the sky occurred and ended 1260 years later at the Salvation in 1945. And the prisoners, of which many were Jews, were saved from the Nazi concentration camps at that point. But at the same time, two nuclear bombs were dropped on Japan. So as we dig, we can see there are multiple layers of these scriptures. And those who understood the meaning of these texts back then must have thought that the sign of the Son of Man in heaven was about to occur, because Jesus said after that tribulation of 1260 years, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the clouds. But instead, the nuclear age began at that point. So that 1260 year period is only a partial fulfillment of one layer, because Jesus said the asteroid will hit at the end of that 1260 year period. And it doesn't say how much time passes between the abomination of desolation and the fleeing of the woman. But that 1260 years between 685 and 1945 is still extremely important, because it highlights the end of World War II, which seems to have been the war in heaven, at least on one level. So we're going to put that here. That's what Revelation 12 said. At the end of the war in the sky, God's representative will set up a kingdom, or the one that claims to be God's representative. And that word for God's representative in Revelation 12 was Theos. But if the Theos kingdom is not the kingdom of the true Elohim, then the God of heaven in Daniel 2:44 must refer to something else as well, because this is describing the same time period. And it does confirm here that it's talking about a different God. So you can see the word in Daniel 2:44. The word for God used in this verse is number 426, which means heathen deity. And this is not the same word used in the first verse of the first chapter of the Bible. In Genesis 1:1, the word for God is number 430, which is Elohim and means divine ones. It's plural. So Genesis 1:1 says the Elohim created the heavens and the earth. And just as a side note, this word translated as created, number 1254, means to create new conditions and circumstances, a transformation. So the very first thing the first book of the Bible says is the Elohim, number 430, created new conditions in the earth. And Genesis chapter 1 goes on to say they made the earth a paradise. And verse 26 says, and the Elohim said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the earth. So the Elohim created man in their own image. In the image of the Elohim, they were created, male and female. So the word translated as man refers to both male and female humans. You can see the word for man, number 120, is Adam or Adam, which refers not to a man named Adam, but to all of mankind. So Adam refers to humans, both male and female. So Elohim said, let us make humans in our image and let them have dominion over the earth. So the Elohim created humans, male and female, and Elohim saw everything they had made, and it was very good. This is important right here, because it's telling us that if humans were created in the image of Elohim, it's telling us that the Elohim are humanoid. And it's also telling us the Elohim were not interested in dominating humans either. They gave humans dominion over all the earth. So the Elohim, it says, created a paradise on the earth, and it was very good. And this word Elohim is the only word for God in Genesis chapter 1. It's plural, and it means divine ones. They created new conditions, put humans here, and it was good. But Daniel 2 is not using the word Elohim. It uses the word Elah, number 426, which means heathen deity. And that seems to be important, because it's saying in verse 44 of Daniel 2 that the heathen God will set up a kingdom at that time. So the direct translation of this verse says, Elah, number 426, the heathen god, will stand in the heavens. And this word for heavens, number 8065, also means sky. So this is occurring in the days of the 10 kings, verse 42, the 10 toes of the feet, the 10 kings. In the days of these kings, the heathen god Elah will stand in the heavens, and a kingdom which is of antiquity will arise. So number 5957 is sometimes translated as in past days, or of old time, or of days past. So it's saying the kingdom that is of old time will arise. So Daniel 2:44 is saying Elah, the heathen god, will stand in the heavens, or it can say the heathen god of the heavens will arise, the kingdom which is of old time. And that makes sense because it's referring to the 10 kings of the feet of the Roman Empire. So it's saying it's setting up the kingdom of the old time. It's rising up that old kingdom. The Roman Empire goes back to 27 BC. So yes, that is the kingdom of the old time. That makes sense. And we also looked at how the United Nations is using a flag that has portions of the old Roman flag on it. So yes, that is what seems to be happening here. And we're going to find more confirmation of that in the book of Revelation. But then it says here that this kingdom of antiquity or old time will destroy and leave the kingdoms of the other people shattered and put an end to all those kingdoms, and it will stand, or 6966, which means endure. So it will endure from the old time. So Daniel 2:42-44 is saying the toes of the feet, in other words, the 10 kings, shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another. And in the days of these kings, the heathen god Elah will stand in the heavens, and the kingdom which is of the old time will destroy and leave the kingdoms of the other people shattered and put an end to all those kingdoms. It will endure from the old time. So again, that makes sense. It's talking about the Roman Empire is rising again. So we know most of the major kingdoms of the world now have established themselves in the heavens with satellites, and almost all of them are member states of the United Nations, which is destroying in the name of peace, as Daniel 8 said. For example, the partition plan of 1947, which was the dividing of the land. So the god in Daniel 2:44 is the heathen god Elah that stands in heaven in the days of the 10 kings. But notice in Daniel 7, when it's talking about the same time frame, the rising of the little horn in verse 8, it says right after that in verse 9, and I beheld until the thrones were cast down. So it's talking about the thrones of the 10 kings. So this is going beyond that. It says, I beheld until the thrones of the 10 kings were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, and a fiery stream issued from him, and the beast was slain and given to the burning flame. So Daniel 7 doesn't use the word Elah for God. It uses the phrase Ancient of Days, who is destroying the beast. So this is not referring to the heathen god in Daniel 7. And then in Daniel 8, in reference to the same time period, it says, the little horn waxed great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the pleasant land. Then in verse 10, the direct translation matches what Revelation 12 told us about the dragon. The direct translation of Daniel 8:10 can also say, the army of the sky became great, the army from the stars fell to earth and trampled, or word number 7429, which also means oppressors. So again, the army of the sky became great, the army from the stars fell to earth, the oppressors. So we're going to put that here. Daniel 8 tells us this occurs at the time of the little horn, which comes out of the 10 kings. The army of the sky will become great. The army of the stars fell to the earth, the oppressors. And we'll look at that word Nephal in a minute because that ties into something else. So this here in Daniel 8 matches exactly what Revelation 12 says about the same time period. The great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called false accuser and the adversary, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth and his angels or messengers were cast out with him. So that's the next point. Daniel 8 and Revelation 12 are describing the same event during the same time period. Revelation 12 says it occurs after the war in the sky, which we know at least on one level was World War II. And that's also connected to Daniel 2, verse 43, because it takes place during the time of the 10 kings. It says, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another. And Daniel says this occurs during the time of the 10 kings, or the 10 toes of the feet. So at the time of the feet and the 10 toes, or the 10 kings, they, and it doesn't tell us who they are exactly, but we're finding out right now, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they will not cleave to one another. So we're going to add a note right here. The dragon is cast to earth sometime after the war in the sky ends. So sometime after 1945. It doesn't say when exactly, but it does indicate when we compare Daniel 2, Daniel 8, and Revelation 12, that this dragon is much more than these 10 points. Daniel 2 says they are mingling with the seed of humans. So the dragon is not a he, it's a they. And this is confirmed in Genesis 6. It talks about the sons of God who mated with humans. But notice the word in verse 4, translated as giants, number 5303, also means the Nephilim. And you can see the word Nephilim originated from 5307, which means to fall or be cast down. And this word Nephal, number 5307, is the same word used in Daniel 8:10. The army fell, 5307, I'm sorry, the army from the stars fell, 5307, to the earth. So there's the connection to Genesis 6, verse 4, that the Nephilim were in the earth in those days when the sons of God came into the daughters of men and bare children to them. Right here, the Nephilim were in the earth in those days and also afterward, who were the sons of God who went into the daughters of mankind to beget children. So notice that word that was translated as when in the King James also means who. So it's not just saying there were giants in the earth when the sons of man came into the daughters of men. It's saying the Nephilim were in the earth in those days who were the sons of God that mated with humans. So we'll add that here. And now it's clear that the dragon does not represent one man or angel. It represents many apparently non-humans who are mating with humans. And we know they're not human because Daniel 2:44 says they mingle with the seed of humans, but they don't cleave to one another. So their seed is not working well with our seed. So they're a different species. And Genesis 3 tells us the way they finally succeeded in mating with humans was by creating a hybrid. That's what Genesis 3 tells us, but we'll talk about that in another video. So Genesis 6 also tells us when this is happening in verse 1. It says it came to pass when men began multiplying on the face of the earth. And this is a very clear population growth chart right here. And it shows the population growth of humans from 10,000 BC until the year 2000 CE. And there's no question when humans began to multiply on the face of the earth. The growth became exponential shortly before the year 2000, and more specifically, you can see the exponential curve started between 1927 and 1960. So Genesis 6 is confirming what Daniel in Revelation told us, that when humans begin to multiply on the earth, which we know occurred between 1927 and 1960, the Nephilim are in the earth in those days. The sons of God go into the daughters of men and beget children with them. And the root of that word Nephilim is Nephal, which is the same word used in Daniel 8:10. The army of the stars fell to the earth, the oppressors, the Nephilim, who are mingling with the seed of humans, mating with humans. And Jesus confirmed this as well. So you can see this story in Genesis 6 is about Noah's flood. These are the events that occurred before Noah's flood. And this ties right back to Matthew 24, Jesus' timeline, which we covered in a previous video. We left off at the sign of the descendants of humans in heaven right after the asteroid impact. That's when the elect are gathered together. And that was in verses 30 and 31. And next, in verse 32, Jesus says, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree." In other words, he's telling us a riddle. "When the branch of the fig tree is tender and puts forth leaves, know that summer is nigh. Know that it is near, even at the doors. This generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. As the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. In the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until Noah entered the ark." And this here in Genesis 6 is describing the days before the flood came. The sons of God were marrying humans. So Jesus said it will be like that in the end. So that's confirmation that when Genesis 6:1 says this is occurring when men begin to multiply on the earth, it really is talking about the time period we're living in now. And by the way, I believe they call that the prophetic perfect tense, when the texts were written as though they're talking about the past, but they're actually talking about the future. So specifically, this time period that it's referring to began between 1927 and 1960. So that's confirmed in Genesis 6:1. Which you can see is the same time period highlighted in the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation. And Jesus also highlighted this same time period as well in verse 32 of Matthew 24, the riddle of the fig tree. So Hosea 9:10 tells us, "Israel is the first ripe in the fig tree." It says, "I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree." So Israel's fathers were the first ripe in the fig tree. And Jesus said, "When the branch of the fig tree is tender and puts forth leaves," in other words, the first ripe, Israel, "know that summer is nigh. This generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled." So the riddle Jesus was giving us is that one generation will not pass after Israel buds. And that appears to refer to 1947, when the country of Israel was made a nation by the UN. One generation, he said, will not pass before it's all fulfilled. So if you consider one generation 100 years, then Jesus was saying this will all be completed before 2047. So Jesus, Daniel, and the book of Revelation are all highlighting the same time period that started at the end of World War II between the years 1945 and 1947. And 1947 is also when the alleged Roswell crash occurred. And many have claimed since then that extraterrestrials have been visiting Earth and creating hybrids. And Steven Spielberg's miniseries Taken tells that story, and it even starts the story during World War II with the Foo Fighters, the UFOs that some of the World War II pilots said seemed as though they were fighting along with them in the air. So it's possible Revelation was referring to Roswell when it said the dragon was cast to earth. So now that we understand who the dragon is in verse 7, the question is, who is Michael? So Michael is mentioned in Daniel 10, and it says, "In the third year of Cyrus, the king of Persia, a thing was revealed to Daniel, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was long." And it doesn't tell us what the thing was until verse 13. It talks about Michael. And This is the direct translation. It says, the ruler of the kingdom of Persia will stand. And on the 20th day, so notice that word was translated as 21 in the King James, but here it's translated as 20. So it says, on the 20th day, behold, one who is like God, the former ruler will go in to help and remain there as king of Persia. And then it says in verse 14, I am come to make you understand what will befall your people in the latter days, for the vision is for many days. So this is not something, or this is something that he says will occur in the end time, and that's important. It's not something that occurred during the reign of the king of Persia when this was written. So this is the first part right here of the riddle in Daniel 10. Then verse 20 seems to continue the riddle. And the direct translation says, and then he said, do you know what goes in now and returns to fight with the ruler of Persia? Behold, the ruler of Greece goes in. So this is the basic gist of the riddle in Daniel 10, these three verses, and this is one translation of it. The kingdom of Persia will stand, and on the 20th day, one who is like God, the former ruler, will go in to help, but remain there as king of Persia. And it makes clear this is something that will happen in the latter days, in other words, the end time. And it says, do you know who goes in and returns to fight with the ruler of Persia? It's the ruler of Greece. So the first point, the kingdom of Persia will stand it on the 20th day. One who is like God will go in to help. So the kingdom of Persia, or I'm sorry, the ruler of Persia, because that's important. It's the ruler of Persia. It says the ruler of Persia will stand, and on the 20th day, one will go in to help. Okay. The ruler of Persia in the latter days was the Ottoman Empire. They were ruling over that region. And it stood on the 20th day in 1920. So we know days can also be years. So it can be referring to the 20th year. So it stood, the ruler of Persia stood, and on the 20th year, one who is like God went in to help, but remained there as king of Persia. Okay. So notice the League of Nations was formed in 1920. That was the 20th year of the 20th century. So the 20th day, the 20th year of the 20th century. And in that same year, on August 10th, the Treaty of Sevres marked the beginning of the partition of the Ottoman Empire. It was also the annihilation of the Ottoman Empire. And the Ottoman Empire was a Sunni Islamic empire. And you can see on this map, which land it lost between 1916 and 1923 during that time period. It was the Persian region that it lost, which is known today as Iraq, Syria, and Israel. And you can also see the yellow territories of the Ottoman Empire that were awarded to Greece by that same treaty in 1920. So where they were taking away the Persian land of the Ottoman Empire and awarding some of the other land to Greece. So Greece was going against the ruler of Persia at that same time in 1920. So the riddle in Daniel 10 says, the ruler of the kingdom of Persia will stand, but on the 20th day, one who is like God will go in to help and remain there as king of Persia in the latter days. So in the 20th year of the 20th century, the Treaty of Sevres was signed to partition the empire. And this treaty began at the Paris Peace Conference. And that also created the League of Nations. And it also says France, Italy, and Britain had secretly begun partitioning the Ottoman Empire as early as 1915, and that was the Sykes-Picot Agreement that divided the Arab or Persian provinces of the Ottoman Empire into British and French provinces. And these provinces were called protectorates because they were under the guise of helping the Persians. So, by the way, you can also see the area around Jerusalem was international control. In other words, it was the League of Nations. So it was actually the League of Nations that caused this to happen. They created these protectorates under the guise of helping the Persians, but they remained there as kings. So again, on the 20th day, this is 1920, on the 20th day, it says in Daniel 10, one who is like God will go in to help, but remain there as king of Persia. And Greece, it says in verse 20, will also be going against the ruler of Persia at that time. So again, Greece was awarded some land from the Ottoman Empire in that same year, in 1920, right here. So the Ottoman Empire was the ruler of Persia at that time. So Greece went against them, and also the League of Nations took away their Persian land at that point. So the texts are telling us that the world empire, the League of Nations, gets its power from the dragon. That's Revelation 13, who apparently are not human. Daniel 2:43. So the riddle in Daniel 10 seems to be telling us that the one who is like God goes in to help those in Persia under the guise of helping them, but remains there as king of Persia in the 20th day. And that's exactly what the League of Nations did officially in 1920 with the Treaty of Sevres. And the area that's now known as Israel was owned by Britain at that time. It was given to Britain, and it was called Mandatory Palestine under the British administration from 1920 until 1948, when they changed the name to Israel. So notice it says down at the bottom, the formal objective of the League of Nations mandate system was to administer parts of the defunct Ottoman Empire, quote, until such time as they are able to stand alone, unquote. So they went in under the guise of helping them, but then they remained there as king. And this occurred on the 20th day, a day for a year, the 20th year of the 20th century. That's when this happened. And in Daniel 10:13, it says the one doing this is Mikael, one who is like God, number 43:17, which stems from the words 43:10, 35:88, and 4:10, which is me, which means who, ki, which means that, and el, which means godlike one. So Mikael, who is like God. And this word el was shortened from the word 0352, which means ram. So Mikael, the name, literally means who is like God, or who is like the ram. So this is what we know about Mikael so far. Mikael fights the war in the sky. And the riddle in Daniel 10 tells us on the 20th day, one who is like God, or one who is like the ram, went in to help Persia, but remained there as king. And we also know Mikael is the great ruler that stands above Daniel's descendants at the tribulation. So that makes sense right here. It says Mikael is the great ruler that stands above the sons of your people. And it's talking to Daniel. So the descendants of Daniel's people, that was in Jerusalem. It says Mikael is the great ruler that stands above them. So that makes sense, because in Daniel 10, it says on the 20th day, 1920, the League of Nations went in to help Persia, but remained there as king, standing above Daniel's descendants. So that makes sense. That's what we know about Mikael so far. But there's one more thing. Notice in Revelation 12, verse 7, the New American Standard Bible in the left column here says Michael and his angels waged war with the dragon. And in this lexicon, I could not find the word that meant against. But if you go, they had the word 4170, which just meant waged war. But if you go to Blue Letter Bible, you can see this is the King James translation. It says Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. But the word that was translated as against, number 2596, also means down from or along or throughout. It also means by, according to, after. So this translation can also say Michael and his angels fought by the dragon, or fought along the dragon, or down from the dragon, which may explain why the NASB doesn't use the word against. It uses the word with. I don't know, but that's important because the first point in Revelation 12:7 is that Mikael is fighting a war in the sky. And that can either be translated that one like the ram is fighting against the dragon, or it can be translated one like the ram is fighting by the dragon, or down from the dragon, or along the dragon. So we'll just leave it there for now. That's what we're told about Mikael so far in Daniel and Revelation 12. So after Mikael and the dragon fight the war in the sky in verse 7, and the dragon is cast to earth in verse 9, then it specifies in verse 12 that the devil or dragon is on earth for a short time. So it says, "Rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them, but woe to the inhabitants of the earth, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows he only has a short time." So once the dragon is cast to earth, it only has a short time. And then it says in verse 13, the dragon persecuted the woman who brought forth the man-child. So after the dragon is cast to earth, it persecutes the woman. And we'll add this to this timeline as well. After the dragon is cast to earth, it persecutes the woman. Then it says in verse 14, and to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time, times and half a time, from the face of the serpent. So that sounds almost exactly like verse 6. The woman fled into the wilderness, into the place prepared by God. Except in verse 6, it uses the word flee, and in verse 14, it uses the word fly. So you can see verse 6 uses the word 5343, flee, and the verse 14 uses the word 4072, fly. And also notice the time period is different. So in verse 6, she flees into the wilderness for 1260 days or years. And in verse 14, she flies into the wilderness for a time, times, and half a time. So after the woman is persecuted by the dragon, she flies into the place prepared by God for a time, times, and half a time. So this is a different event from the first fleeing into the wilderness, because it says it occurs after the dragon is cast to earth. So it tells us first the woman flees, then the war in the sky, then the dragon is cast to the earth, then the dragon persecutes the woman, and after that the woman flies to a safe place. So obviously the woman represents a group of people. The first time it represented those in Judea, but now it's a different event. It's something that occurs after the dragon is cast to earth. And that's probably why the time period is different. The first escape in Revelation 12 lasts for 1260 days or years. And the second escape lasts for a time, times, and half a time, which it makes clear is a short period of time. So we'll add this to the timeline here. After the dragon persecutes the woman, she flies to the wilderness for a time, times, and half a time. So notice that time period matches what Daniel 12 said. The people will escape at the time of the tribulation that lasts for a time, times, and half a time. So that time period in Daniel belongs on the same line with the second escape in Revelation 12. And that explains why Daniel 12 says all the people in the book will be delivered or rescued. So that tells us who the woman represents in the second escape in Revelation 12. It's all the people in the book. And the first escape in Revelation 12 matches what Jesus said in Matthew 24. When those in Judea flee into the mountains, the tribulation will start. But notice in verse 29, Jesus said, after the tribulation of those days, the sun and moon will go dark, the stars will fall, and the sign of the Son of Man in heaven will appear, and the elect will be gathered together. After the tribulation of those days, or after the tribulation of the days. So the tribulation of the days, in other words, the 1260 days, which we know can also represent years. That makes sense because the final time of trouble is not a period of days. It's a time times in half a time. So after the tribulation of the days, Jesus said the sun and the moon will go dark and the stars will fall, and that's the asteroid impact. And it said the sign will appear of the Son of Man in heaven, or the sign will flash of the descendants of humans in heaven, and the elect will be gathered together. So the elect will be gathered together at the end of the 1260 days or years when the asteroid impacts. And that's when all the people in the book will fly into the place prepared by God for a time times in half a time. So the woman escapes for the second time in Revelation 12 in verse 14. Then in verse 15, it says the serpent, that's the other word for the dragon, the serpent will cast a flood after the woman. So the dragon casts a flood after the woman, thinking it will carry her away, but she escapes before the dragon is even aware that she's gone. And that indicates that the escape occurs at the same time of the flood, which implies that it will occur at the same time of the asteroid impact, because we're told in Revelation 17, verse 21, that the asteroid will hit the sea, at least one of them. It says, a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea. Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down. And Jeremiah says Babylon will be covered by the multitude of the waves. So when the stars fall at the end of the 1260 days or years, one of them hits the sea, causing tidal waves. And that's most likely the flood it's talking about in Revelation 12 that occurs at the same time Jesus indicated the asteroid hit, it will impact and the woman will escape. So the flood in Revelation 12 fits into the sequence of events in Daniel and Matthew as well. The people will be delivered when the asteroid hits. And we'll look at more confirmation of this in other chapters of Revelation in subsequent videos. But next in Revelation 12, it says in verses 16 and 17, the earth swallowed up the flood, and the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So the flood dissipates and the dragon goes after the remnant during the time, times, and half a time. And notice the word translated as remnant, number 3062, literally means the remaining. So verse 17 makes it clear that at least some of those who keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus Christ will remain after those in the book, the elect, fly to the place prepared by God. So we'll put that on this timeline as well. The dragon goes after the remnant during the time, times, and half a time after all the people in the book fly out. And that's the conclusion of Revelation chapter 12. It doesn't specify what occurs after the dragon goes after the remnant. So we'll leave a question here because it doesn't tell us that in Revelation 12. But other chapters of Revelation do explain that, which we'll look at in another video. But as you can see, Revelation 12 makes clear that there will be at least two escapes, and that the word woman in Revelation 12 represents at least three things. First, the constellation Virgo as the sign in the first part of Revelation 12. Second, those in Judea in verse 6. And third, all those in the book, the elect, in verse 14. So we were also given an enormous amount of information about the dragon in Revelation 12 and a little bit of information about Mikael. The most important point about Mikael seems to be that it is one who is like the ram. So that's it for this week. If you want more information, the whole series playlist is linked here, and there are several other videos linked in the description below. Just click on Show More to open up more links on this subject. And if you like this video, please consider providing support. These presentations are funded by viewers like you, so thank you to everyone who is making this research possible. I hope you're doing well, and I'll talk to you next week.